Hello, I'm Harry Bucknell. Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Army Benevolent Fund. As There's Something About a Soldier, written by Noel Gay in 1934, and here played by the Band of the Grenadier Guards, fades away. So for this edition of General Talk, we turn the focus on our army of Army Benevolent Fund volunteers, who give selflessly of their free time, banging the drum, organising events, and offering a helping hand where needed to our soldiers, veterans, and their immediate families. Our eyes and ears, in short, they carry out the charity's work on the ground. My guest for this programme is Daz Keelor, who served 16 years in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. After working on contracts in the Gulf States, he returned home to Cornwall and took up the cause of veteran welfare. I hope you enjoy the programme.
Daz, it's great to see you. You left the Army after nearly 16 years in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps in 1996, and then you went around the world from Kuwait, Dubai to Qatar until finally coming back to the UK in 2017. When you got back to the United Kingdom, you almost immediately started to throw yourself into supporting veterans and their causes. What was the reason behind that, having been abroad for so long?
Well, the expat community is probably one of the it's the closest I've ever been to being back in a regiment. And I miss that instantly. Whilst I've got family here in Cornwall, obviously my wife was with me and then we bought a dog. There was an Armed Forces Breakfast Club here in Newquay. And I just found out, went along and was welcomed with open arms. And we have a lot of RAF in Cornwall, which is great. And they take a lot of ribbing and there's a lot of banter. And it was just, it was enjoyable. It was good for me, you know, good for my mental health. Though 7 years ago, I probably wasn't as aware of my own mental health as other people's, as I am now. And it was just really good to socialise and be amongst people who've served, and now I know from what I've been doing over the last 7 years here in Cornwall is, you know, that's the best therapy for all veterans, really, being amongst other veterans. And I just enjoyed it and thought that we could just do a little bit more, you know, move it a little bit further forwards. And slowly here, you know, here I am, and we've got some great ideas and great plans, and just hope they'll come to fruition.
Has Breakfast Club, did it help you getting back into work when you came back to the UK?
It gave me relief from working. Even though I've been in Civvy Street for quite a while, coming back to the UK, I originally worked for a charitable trust, and then I left that and got a job as facilities manager. So the stresses and strains were relieved by meeting up with fellow veterans around a pint on a Friday night. And it became very, you bond very quickly, and you hear about other people's problems and realize that yours aren't that bad, and then everybody was helping each other, and you know, we still are to this day, but really it's just meeting and chatting and having a good laugh, Harry. I mean, that helps, doesn't it?
Well, that was surely what was always the attraction about service life, as I recall. You joined the army at age 16 years old in 1981, the Royal Army Ordnance Corps at the depot at Deepcut. Your family has got quite a considerable background in the armed forces. What's the length of service in toto?
If my grandfather's stories are to be believed, the Keelor family have probably got about 130 years service within the family. Yeah.
We include in that, of course, that you've had not only your own service in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, but your father, your brothers, and also cousins in the Royal Engineers, the Royal Navy, and also the Sultan of Oman's Armed Forces. Your uncle, Jerry, was a warrant officer class one in the Royal Army Ordnance School. And of course, we forget that rank is known as conductor. It's the most senior rank. It's the most senior warrant officer class one in the British Army, or it was at the time. What were the special privileges that a conductor held in the ROC?
Well, the conductor gets appointed from what warrant officer class one. My uncle Jerry, he wasn't a conductor. He probably thought he was. But it's one of the most senior appointments in the British Army, other than, I believe, and don't quote me on this, Garrison Sergeant Major and Academy Sergeant Major. But that may well have changed. You know, my military service goes back, you know, I last served 30 odd years ago. So, but yeah, you know, my former trade as a military training instructor, one of our RSMs was a conductor, Charlie Jones.
But, Daz, you joined the Royal Army Ordnance School, which now, of course, is part of the Royal Logistic Corps. Was responsible for ammunition and all manner of supplies, including laundries and postage and all sorts of important things that keep an army going. What was the attraction to you to join the RAOC back in 1981 as a 16-year-old deep cut?
Well, I originally went to the careers office with the intention of being a vehicle mechanic in the Remy. But I wasn't good enough, to be honest. And they probably had more applicants to be vehicle mechanics than anything else. And then they offered me all the infantry regiments and the Royal Engineers or the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. So all my life, all the 16 years of my life, I'd been meeting my uncles when they were on leave. And they'd been to Malaya, Hong Kong, you know, all over the world, you know, back then in the 60s and the 70s, there were a lot more postings. So when I heard Royal Army Ordnance Corps, I thought, yeah, I know that. So I put my name down as a supply specialist. By the time I got to the Apprentices College at Deepcourt, my uncles, and one of them was still serving as a WO1 in Antwerp, the vehicle depot there, he had had my trade changed to vehicle specialist because that's what the majority of my uncles were. So that was all done behind the scenes for me, and absolutely probably the best, you know, the best thing that could have happened to me, to be honest, at that time.
In Northern Ireland with the EOD, that was part of ATO. What was that like in 1984?
Well, the guy who was supposed to be going from Vehicle Depot Ashchurch broke his leg playing rugby 2 weeks before he was due, and they asked for a volunteer, and I, as an immature 19-year-old, put my hand up, and 2 weeks later I was on a plane into Aldergrove, as it was then. I'd done no Northern Ireland training. I actually travelled with an army suitcase on a civilian flight. I grew up very, very quickly. I owe a lot to the ATO of Number 2 Section Omar Detachment. At that time, he was a staff sergeant. His name was Graham Chubb. He clipped me round the ear hole and pointed me in the right direction. And it was a turning point in my life, because prior to that, I certainly drank too much, thought I knew everything, and came down to earth with a bump. So it was a fantastic experience, and watching the bravery of the ATOs, the number ones and the number twos, who were corporal ammunition technicians from the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, you know, their skills, their bravery, and their knowledge of stuff was amazing, Harry. It was amazing.
And of course, their code name was Felix. Fetch Felix was always the cry when there was a bomb that needed to be dealt with. And they were incredibly brave. And many, of course, lost their lives in the pursuit of such gallant actions. You mentioned rugby. I think, Daz, it's fair to say you were a fairly keen rugby player in the Royal Army Ordnance School. Is that fair?
Yep. Never played before in my life. Got to Vehicle Depot Ashchurch. I'd grown a pair of shoulders. So at the age of 17 and a half, my corporal, Fred Scarborough, who's a bit of a character in the vehicle specialist world, told me I was playing rugby on Wednesday. So I went to one training session and as a tight head prop and got bent in half and twisted all the way back, you know, to Sheffield Wednesday and Shrove Tuesday. But I just fell in love with it, Harry. What a sport. And it still is, you know, a great. I love watching it. But I wish I could still play. I really do.
You say, but one of the things that was that the army gave you that understanding and that interest in rugby, which without which you would never have had.
Absolutely, fell in love with it, and the people that I've met and shared the camaraderie that you know from all services and all different regiments. It was it probably kept me in the army longer than I would have if I'd not played it. If you get my drift.
And as you, halfway through your military career, you became a military training instructor. In fact, I think at one point you even confessed to me that you rather enjoyed drill. How did that come about?
Well, vehicle specialist trade was quite steady, but quite slow promotion. And my mother will testify that I've got a bit of a mouth on me. I can shout quite a bit. So, I got a 6-month tour as a provost corporal at Training Battalion and Depot Deep Cut, and saw all these young, young military training instructors cutting about, marching the troops, and I thought I could do that, and just dragged myself along, got fitter, learned things. We had the Ordnance Corps at that time. This was like 1984. We'd had quite a few people transfer in from the airborne regiments and those who'd been down the Falklands. So there was all this knowledge and some great stories, but you know, all this knowledge and us young Lance Corporals, and you and I have a mutual acquaintance who I served with there as a young Lance Corporal, and we were just soaking up this information like sponges. So moved out the guard room, worked in the platoons, and then eventually got my military training instructor's course in 1985. To be honest, probably passed it by the skin of my teeth. Got my Lance Corporal stripe. Prior to that, I'd been local, acting unwanted, unpaid. And got promoted in 85 and started off as an instructor in, you know, many subjects, but drill was always good. Great teamwork builder. I had some friends who were ex-guards regiment, a couple from your old regiment, Harry, and they were just TikTok barmy, and I just loved it. I thought it was great. And you do take a bit from every one of your seniors, don't you? You take a bit of everybody's character to start building your own. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great.
You went on to instruct at the G&E Regiment in Cologne, which was a joint Royal Corps of Transport and Royal Army Ordnance Corps, regiment of junior leaders. Was that must have been very rewarding training, wasn't it? Rewarding work.
Yeah, I went there as a corporal. And for me, that was like going full circle, because that was, I mean, they called it the Apprentice College when I joined. So going back to a junior leaders regiment and being part of the training staff, and seeing everything that those young lads were going through. And then I got promoted to sergeant. So then I had 12 months and I had my own platoon. And that was probably, you know, probably one of the most rewarding jobs that I've had even since. Just to be able to pass on knowledge, skills, a bit of character, because we always had a laugh and a bit of a giggle, but still the discipline was there. And do you know, Harry, some of those young recruits who marched themselves off the square with the junior RSM and junior sergeants and that, they're still in touch with me to this day. And it's really nice to hear them, you know, pass on comments that the little part that I played in their initial military career, you know, and you never forget your platoon sergeant, do you, Harry? Really?
No,
you don't. So hopefully always for the right reasons.
You're listening to General Talk with me, Harry Bucknell, and my guest, veteran and Army Benevolent Fund supporter, Daz Keelor.
When the Royal Army Ordnance Corps was subsumed into the Royal Logistic Corps, were you sad to see the RAOC go?
Absolutely. That was part of the beginning of the end of my military career for me. The trade of military training instructor, we had very highly qualified, instructors. The other regiments, corps that we were amalgamating with didn't have that professional trade as such. So we were worried that we were going to be losing that professionalism and that esprit de corps for our trade. Certain things have happened in the RLC that you could say reflect on the demise of that being a professional trade. I enjoy change now, but change then for me, and there was a few other things, a few personal things that weren't going right. So I stuck with it. Ended up doing a tour in out in Bosnia on Ock Grapple 5, which was 1994-95. And when I came back from that, I knew that was it. So I signed off. Plus, I'd seen my uncles really struggle when they got out, Harry. 44, 46-year-old blokes achieving such high status ranks as warrant officers and staff sergeants, what have you. And they struggled. And resettlement wasn't that good, in their day. It wasn't brilliant in my day. My resettlement officer in Manchester told me to aim for the Corps of Commissionaires and eventually, I might make supervisor one day. So, things have changed a lot. But I don't regret leaving.
No. Did you find the act of leaving must have been hard? And did you, and once you got over it, you got back and you settled into Civvy Street, was that the reason you decided that you would do your bit to help out veterans and get involved with the veteran community down in Cornwall?
Yeah. I felt that from those experiences that I'd had and the personal side of my life, not that I had any dramas or traumas, and it's always good to listen, isn't it? I mean, that's the best part of, meeting with other veterans is just listening. You don't always have to have a solution, but, sharing a problem and patting them on the back or if, putting their arm around somebody and giving them a hug, can mean a lot. So, yeah, I found, especially now as I'm getting older, 58 is not that old though, is it?
No, it's not, Daz.
No, it's not. No. It's just something, and it's not the ego that gets rewarded. It's just something inside, karma, whatever you want to call it. It just gives you a nice feeling just to know that that bloke, that lady, that veteran is just that little bit better off because you've spent an hour with them or you've pointed them in the right direction for a bit of support, whether it's financial, mental health, housing, or food, So, yeah, I do find it very rewarding.
You're very active on Instagram, and I see a great deal of the great work you do just in gathering up veterans around you for all different manner of occasions. But last year, you were you became the Armed Forces Coordinator, as it were, for the National Armed Forces Day in Falmouth, June the 24th, 2023. That was quite a momentous occasion, I gather.
It was huge for Cornwall. I mean, we've got the census in 2022 said that we had 30,200 odd veterans in Cornwall. 6.3% of Cornish residents are veterans. It's not the highest in the country, but it's still quite high. And for Cornwall to go forward and get that bid and win it was amazing. I'm very fortunate that one of the veterans that I meet up with on the Friday, an ex-submariner, a lieutenant commander, I think, but they wear so much gold rings on their sleeves. I can't keep up with it, Harry. Well, he's a Cornwall councillor and he's Cornwall Council's veterans champion. And it was his idea to go to the council and say, you know, why don't we bid for this? So after they'd won it, I said, look, if there's anything you need help with, give me a shout. I'm very fortunate that my employer, big insurance company who have a lot to do with rugby, they do volunteering hours. So my line manager gave me permission to use a bit of work time. And Lewis asked me if I'd be the veterans coordinator.
It must be May, June time last year, rather. We're getting ready for this great parade. And you have done something which is reckless, which we were always taught never to do in the armed forces. And that is you volunteer yourself. What happened after that?
Well, my wife gave me a good talking to. But she got a bit of peace and quiet in the evenings because I was up in my office in the spare room, sending out emails, contacting as many of the armed forces, groups, charities, socials that I could in Cornwall to promote it. We had 200 spaces on the actual parade on the Saturday morning, 200 veterans places. And there were another 800 participants for the march on that Saturday morning. The most rewarding bit was getting those veterans and their families who had a few mobility issues, parking, seating, whatever, to as many of the events that we could get them to. Not just the parade, but the orchestra up at the castle, Pendennis Castle, and the other events at Falmouth. Yeah, and it just culminated in that parade on that Saturday morning where it set off in four different batches with four different marching bands. And we were the last to go, Harry, and we set off from the top from the top of Falmouth. They have a square called the Moor, and then down onto the High Street. And we marched down that hill past the Moor, and there were thousands of people. I'm getting a bit emotional now. Thousands of people lining the streets and clapping. It was brilliant. And I was crying my eyes out. and other veterans were crying, and we had WAFs, we had RENs, we had WRAC, we had all the tri-services veterans, some of them in mobility scooters section at the back. We had the Chelsea pensioners at the front of us. There was about a dozen of them, and they were great fun. And everywhere I looked, I saw tears and emotion. And then marching past the saluting dais that was down by, and I didn't know this, but my dad was there, and he told me, when all the serving troops went through and the cadets and all that, all the dignitaries were sat down, and there was a member of the royal family there. I think it was the Duke of Gloucester. He was there on the saluting dais, taking the salute. And whilst all those troops marched through, everybody was sat down. When the Chelsea pensioners and the veterans came through, and we had a band from RNAS Yeovilton and a mix of other people marched us past there, everybody stood up. And we didn't know at the time that they'd stood up for us. And it's those little things, Harry, that made every painful email, painful phone call, every little thing so worthwhile. But there were thousands and thousands of people in Falmouth. It's quite a small town, if it is a town. People in Falmouth will probably shoot me now anyway for saying that. But, you know, they were lining the streets. They never stopped clapping. They never stopped cheering. And you'll have noticed from my voice, I've got tears in my eyes now. It was amazing and it was so worth it. If anybody out there listening wants to do something worthwhile, get involved in your local armed forces day. You know, no matter how small or how large, just get involved because it's rewarding and you don't know that it's rewarding until you go and bloody do it.
Daz Keela, thank you so much for being my guest on General Talk. And thank you not only for your service, but for your volunteering too. It's been great to catch up with you, friend. Take care. God bless.
And you, Harry.
And my thanks once again, not only to Daz Keela, but everyone who supports the important work of the Army Benevolent Fund, the national charity of the British Army, which since 1944, the last 80 years, has provided a lifetime of support to soldiers, veterans, and their immediate families when they are in need. Special mention should also be made of Daz Keela's employer, global insurance brokers Arthur J. Gallagher, and the many other companies who allow their staff time to pursue charitable activities. For details on the national network of Armed Forces and Veterans Breakfast Clubs, established to enable veterans and serving armed forces personnel to meet face-to-face in a relaxed, safe, social environment for breakfast and banter, to combat loneliness and allow veterans to return to the tribe, which is free to attend, free to join, visit www.afvbc.world. That's afvbc.world. And if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, then visit the veritable cornucopia of past editions, which can be found at armybenevolentfund.org. We close with the bands marching through Falmouth on Armed Forces Day in June 2023, expertly organised, as you heard earlier, by Daz Keela. Do join us next month. Until then, from me, Harry Bucknell, thank you for listening and farewell. With studio editing by Michael Ciliano, this has been a GameKeeper production for the Army Benevolent Fund.